Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
I like it. Got a body, baby. Richard set. Put down from behind. He never saw him coming. Kyle Williams. Never saw him coming.
The John Murphy Show. Presented by NOCO.
And now I'm a little more comfortable talking to you because I can tell you really know football. You know?
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Safety! 2 points on the board for the Buffalo Bills.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight is an A-plus example of why this is the best show on radio with proud James Madison alumnus Arthur Motes, Fred Jackson on the new running back helmet rule, and former Syracuse quarterback Greg Paulus. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Touchdown! C.J. Spiller, a 10-yard touchdown run, and what a run it was!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is The John Murphy Show on the official voice of the Buffalo Bills, WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Best show on radio. All time, anywhere, geographically?
All time.
Really? Wow. Feeling pretty good about the show, are you? Well, let's see if I can hold it together. Hello, welcome. It is Wednesday night. We are live on the radio tonight with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. And we're live here at One Bills Drive and one night after the podcast. Podcast up again tomorrow night as we make way for Sabres hockey. And then we're back on the air with more live radio Friday. Here tonight, live from 7 to 9 p.m. to talk about anything you'd like about the Buffalo Bills, the NFL, some league rule changes today. And we can certainly entertain thoughts about that. The helmet rule, players cannot use the crown of their helmet on offense now as it was on defense for the last several years. We'll go in depth on that rule change. We'll talk with Fred Jackson about it at 8 o'clock tonight. And get some comments from league officials about that. But what do you think of that rule? And more importantly, what rule would you like to see in the National Football League? What rule? I mean, maybe a cottage rule, something you've seen in, you know, arena football or NFL Europe over the years. Are there any rules, I mean, within reason, not craziness, are there any rules you would like to see the National Football League adopt? I know what I would. I would love to see the NFL go to 15 yards for pass interference. I just think it would make a lot of sense. I think the pass interference penalty, the spot of the foul penalty in pass interference is way too onerous on the defense. I don't think, 15 yards is still enough. I don't think we'd see an increase in pass interference calls. I think if there's a obvious scoring play, you could alter the rule to say, if there's pass interference that would have resulted in a score, then you could make it a 1 yard line type of situation as they do now with pass interference in the end zone. But for the most part, I think 15 yards is enough when it comes to the pass interference penalty. But what do you think? Do you have thoughts on that or any other rule change you'd like to see in the National Football League? Phone lines are open. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. You can dial us up toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show, and you can email the show at johnmurphyshow@bills.nfl.com. A lot of ways to get in touch with us, including the phone, 803-0550, the number to call. The rules changes were approved today in the NFL meetings out in Phoenix. It was the last day of the meetings before the owners broke it up, and we're going to take you through some of those changes as we talk about some of the news of news of the day. But the news of the day begins with kind of late-breaking news that came down just before we went on the air. Kind of a shock from the Chicago Bears. One of the all-time Bears is no longer a Chicago Bear. The Brian Urlacher era is over in Chicago. The team putting out a press release within the hour that they were unable to reach an agreement with Urlacher. Both sides have decided to move on for the 2013 season. Bears general manager Phil Emery said in the release, quote, "Brian's been an elite player in our league for over a decade. He has shown great leadership and helped develop a winning culture over his time with the Bears. Brian will always be welcome as a member of the Bears." Brian Urlacher, released by the Chicago Bears, the two sides unable to reach a new contract agreement, so he is out there, a free agent, somebody that you'd want to see in the Bills. I don't know, there's some mileage there, but boy, one of the all-time greats, Brian Urlacher, now out there. The rules changes, we talked about that, and the big one, the one that's generating most of the controversy, the league owners approved a rule that will prevent ball carriers from initiating contact with the crown of their helmets in the open field. Jeff Fisher, the St. Louis Rams coach, a member of the competition committee, said it's a very important step in player safety. The controversy over the crown of the helmet hit rule had been growing since the league proposed it last Thursday. Matt Forte, Chicago Bears running back, and others criticized it, but it passed today by the owners by a count of 31-1. Only the Bengals voted against it. So under the new rule, a runner or a tackler, it's always been a tackler, at least the last several years it's been a tackler, but now a runner or a tackler would draw a 15-yard penalty if he initiates forcible contact by delivering a blow with the top or crown of his helmet against an opponent. And this is important when both players are clearly outside the tackle box, which is defined as an area extended from tackle to tackle and from 3 yards beyond the line of scrimmage to the offensive team's end line. So that's important too. Outside the tackle box, we're basically talking about open field here. An incidental contact by the helmet of a runner or a tackler will not be deemed a foul. Now, the league says they know this is going to be a judgment rule. It is not part, will not be reviewable by the replay, and they don't expect that it will create that much controversy, at least as far as the NFL is concerned. We know there's going to be helmet-to-helmet contact, Jeff Fisher said. He is on the rules committee, the competition committee, Jeff Fisher, the Rams coach, and he talked about what this rule does and why they put it in place today.
There's no rule that prohibits a runner from using his face mask, nor the hairline. Okay, what we're talking about is keeping the head up. When you're just making contact with the hairline, your head's basically up. Okay, we've said numerous times about bringing the shoulder back into this. We're not going to not allow a runner to protect himself, or to protect the football, or to drop his head in an effort to protect himself against the runner. It's delivering the blow.
Initiating the contract, that's an important distinction. Dean Blandino, who is the NFL's new vice president of officiating, he was on our show a week ago, he talked about what referees will look for under the new crown of the helmet rule.
We don't feel this is any more difficult than the other player safety rules that we have, hits on defenseless receivers. The way we're going to teach it is we're looking for to square up the opponent, lower the head, and deliver the blow with the very top crown of the helmet. So the official will be looking at those three things to make that determination. We understand it happens quickly, but there's an educational process that takes place, and it involves a lot of tape. And we're going to be looking, as to Rich's point, looking at a lot of legal plays so that the officials understand what we don't want called.
That's Dean Blandino, the vice president of officiating for the league. It is fairly limited, and I'm interested when we talk to Fred Jackson next hour to make sure he understands how limited he is. But still, Fred Jackson has already tweeted out some comments about the rule. Doesn't sound like he likes it. Matt Forte, the Bears, doesn't like it. And Hall of Fame running back Marshall Faulk doesn't like it. He talked on NFL Network today about his displeasure with the new rule.
It's a stupid rule. And you know, I've been trying to wrap my head around what it's all about, and I guess that if you put all the emphasis on the defender to be responsible for player safety like they have in the past couple of years, you must come up with something to have the offense think of or try to make an effort to make the game safer on their behalf. And you know, it's all about suits. That's suits run our games, and now the Zebras will have it on them to make the call and make the call right. And if they get it wrong, it's 15 yards, and who cares if they got the intent wrong? It's all about intent. So, you know, it is what it is. What can I do about it? I'm just glad that I don't have to play with that understanding, and I don't have to play under those rules, because I'm not quite sure how I would protect myself at times.
Marshall Faulk says it's all about suits. The suits are running the game. Very interesting. All right, so that's one of the rules changes made today. And the other one, the tuck rule, eliminated. The vote 29-1 with two abstentions. The Steelers voted against it. Patriots and Redskins abstained. The tuck rule, you'll recall, allowed a fumbled ball moving forward in the hand of the quarterback to be called an incomplete pass. And, of course, it became famous on Tom Brady's famous 2001 playoff game against Oakland when he dropped the ball while starting a passing motion. They called that an incomplete pass. From now on, it will be a fumble, just as it looks like a fumble. The owners also voted to amend the replay rule involving the illegal throwing of a challenge flag. Now that's going to be known as the Jim Schwartz rule, after the Lions coach will tie the challenging plays to replay. So under the new rule, every time a coach initiates a replay, his team is charged a timeout. If the play is challenged illegally, as it was in Jim Schwartz's case for the Lions last year, the team will lose a timeout even if the challenge is successful. You recall last year in the Thanksgiving game, Schwartz challenged the Texans' touchdown run, and they couldn't review it because it was an illegal challenge, and the touchdown stood, even though the runner was clearly down. That won't happen again. They'll lose a timeout, and they'll still review it. And even if the replay is successful, you lose a timeout. All right, those are the rules changes today. Roger Goodell, after the end of the owners' meeting today, announced the Pro Bowl is coming back, and it will return to Hawaii. That's been in doubt for the last couple of years. The commissioner confirming today that the much-debated end-of-the-season All-Star game will continue for at least another year. And he said there are some changes that are being discussed. Goodell talked about possible changes.
One was the idea of the players are selected as they are in the past, but the teams are decided through a draft that could be done by a captain. To use an example from this past year that we've talked about was Peyton Manning picks one team and Eli Manning picks the other team. We think some of that is going to create greater interest. And I think the game has, you know, I made it the point earlier that they clearly made a very positive effort in the way they played the game this year. So we are planning, and we will play a game in Hawaii next year.
Yeah, Goodell made that clear that the Pro Bowl will be played the week before the Super Bowl. Hawaii expected to be the future set of games, at least part of a rotation of Pro Bowl games in the future, and Pro Bowl still remains in Hawaii next year with some possible changes. All right, on the free agency front, not much movement today. You heard we talked about Brian Urlacher being given his walking papers by the Chicago Bears. Brandon Moore, a guard who in some folks' minds has been linked to the Bills' offensive line, he's making a visit with the Miami Dolphins, according to USA Today, visiting with the Dolphins today. If he signs there, he would likely step in at right guard to replace John Jerry. Brandon Moore has started every game for the Jets since 2005, but so far they have expressed very little interest in bringing him back. Elvis Dumervil out on the free agent market. It was talked about the other day that he might re-sign with Denver after that fax snafu last Friday, but now the Denver Post says Dumervil has not been overwhelmed by Denver's recent contract offers, and he's going to start taking free agent visits over the next 2 days. Reportedly, the Baltimore Ravens interested. Dumervil, 29 years old, the Broncos ready to host Dwight Freeney and John Abraham on free agent visits today. And some NFL pro days today, one of them at Utah, and defensive lineman star Lotulelei had a big performance today working out. 38 reps on the bench press, three cone drill, and a good time. He dominated his position drills, according to NFL.com. Lotulelei was discussed as a possible number one overall pick, but then recalled at the combine, he came up with that heart issue. He was cleared to work out, and his workouts today might alleviate some of the concerns about the heart issue that cropped up at the combine. And it was pro day at Tennessee today. The Vols with pro day, with Tyler Bray, the quarterback, throwing passes to teammates Justin Hunter, the receiver, Cordero Patterson, the other receiver. Bray and Patterson did not participate in every timing. They stood on their combine workouts. Tyler Bray, the quarterback, talked today about where he has improved in the offseason.
Footwork. Improved since the season. I improved a little bit up to the combine, and I've improved a lot since the combine.
Is that what the feedback you were getting back from teams that they wanted to see improve on?
Yeah, just inconsistency. Going out there at the start of the game, footwork's good, and then by the middle to end, it's getting sloppy, and accuracy starting to go all over the place. So just work on your footwork helps.
That's Tyler Bray, the Tennessee quarterback. I don't think anyone has him penciled in as a early quarterback selection in the draft. Certainly not a first-rounder, but we'll see. Still some time to go. So that's the news of the day. A lot of it centering on rules changes, and we'd like to know what rules you would like to see changed in the NFL. I mentioned I would love to see pass interference changed to just a standard 15-yard penalty instead of spot of the foul. And I know, you know, the argument against would be that, you know, if you're beyond 15 yards, take the penalty. I don't think it'll play out that way. I don't think teams would necessarily surrender 15 yards and an automatic first down so easily. But maybe you feel differently about that, or what other rules change you'd like to see in the NFL. We've got phone lines open right now for the next couple of minutes. 803-0550, the number, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Let's start with Steve in Everest. Steve, where are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Amherst. Thanks, Steve.
Amherst, okay. What's up, Steve?
That I wanted to bring up here.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you with the pass interference. That's a great rule change. One thing I would like to see, allow receivers to make a catch with 1 foot in bounds. I can just imagine some of the acrobatic plays we would see. And I can see having to limit it maybe within 10 yards or something, or in the red zone you have to have 2 feet in, or maybe just the end zone. But just imagine some of the acrobatic catches we would see. And then one question I wanted to ask you, I'm not sure if you know the specifics, regarding the helmet rule for the running backs. Do you know if that would affect a running back if he's diving forward to pick up a few extra yards?
Well, yeah, let me I've got the rule change in front of me here, the proposal anyway, the one that was passed today. But before I get to that, I don't necessarily disagree with the 1 foot in. In fact, I think I would like that, and it does work well in college, but I think you need it all over the field. I think it would be crazy if you start to enforce it, you know, in the red zone or in the end zone or something. I think it would work, and I'd like to see that, the 1 foot instead of 2 feet. On the I'm looking at the crown of the helmet rule here, and no, it doesn't really matter if you're diving forward. I think a lot of it is about being outside the tackle box, extending from tackle to tackle, from 3 yards beyond the line of scrimmage forward to the offensive team's end line. So diving forward, if you're outside the tackle box, diving forward, leading with the crown of your helmet, not the face mask, yeah, that would be illegal. And, you know, I think it's I think it's pretty well restricted. You know, I think it's pretty well restricted. Diving forward, you know, just don't put your head down and initiate, by the way, initiate contact is in the rule. It's not absorb contact there, but initiate contact with the top of your head. I think that makes some sense. Let's go to John in Lancaster. John, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing tonight? Hey, I just was listening to the program. I was saying about spiking the ball from the quarterback. That's pretty much intentional grounding. They mismanage their timeouts or whatever. You've got to spike the ball to stop the clock. They want to spike the ball now. Move the ball back 5 yards.
Well,
pretty much intentional grounding. It's delay a game, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, well, it's an effort to stop the clock. But doesn't that make for more exciting finishes, John, when teams have an opportunity to basically forfeit a down? I mean, they are giving up a down when you spike the ball. But trading a down for the clock stoppage, doesn't that make for the potential anyway for more exciting finishes?
It'll make for the potential for a more exciting finish, too, when you got to move the ball back 5 yards for mismanaging your timeouts. You're at the end of the game, you mismanage your timeouts. You know I can slam the ball on the ground and get the field goal off. Well, you could slam the ball on the ground all you want, but move the ball back 5 yards now.
Yeah. All right. I see your point. I don't necessarily agree. I think you might you can mismanage or, in fact, use your timeouts to and get to the point where, you know, you need to clock it, as they say, to spike it and stop the clock. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, because I do think the upshot might be, you know, less dramatic finishes, you know, that and it's not easy always to clock it, you know, to spike the ball and stop the clock. You got to get people lined up. They got to be set for the required amount of time. And the pass, by the way, has to be the right kind of pass. We've seen instances where, you know, teams haven't executed it perfectly. But I don't know if I'd buy that one, but I appreciate what you're saying. Ray in Buffalo. Ray, you're on the John Murphy Show. Hello.
How you doing, Murph?
Okay.
Thanks for having me. I just want to say this. I think that the new running back rule to where the Buffalo in the head, I think it sucks. Because, I mean, listen, I mean, everyone knows when a running back, you got to get low. You know, and your shoulders go, your neck and your head is connected to your shoulders. When you get low and trying to push for yardage, that's what you're gonna do. And if you try to keep your head up while your shoulders is low, you're gonna end up breaking your neck or something. I mean, I think they're trying to make it too safe. I mean, I don't know. I'll hang up and listen. I just think it's crazy.
Yeah, well, they're trying to make it safe. That is the. That's what they're trying to do, Ray, and I appreciate what you're saying. Again, you got to keep in mind, you can go low. We'll talk with Fred Jackson about this at 8 o'clock. My interpretation and understanding is the running back can get low. You just can't get low and duck your head down so that you initiate contact with the top of your head, the crown of your helmet. And that's different. You can get low and, you know, hit somebody with your face mask. You can get low and hit somebody with a shoulder. I just think they want to avoid people leading with the crown of their helmet. Here's what Jeff Fisher on the competition committee said about some of the feedback, some of the issues that you talked about, Ray, that are coming into the league.
Over the last day or so, we've had, we've received a lot of opinions from former running backs, some in favor of this and some opposed to this. And with respect for all of them, you know, prior to coming in here, I got a phone call from Eddie George. And Eddie George said, "What's going on?" And he took the position that this is going to be a difficult thing to enforce and a difficult way to play this game. And after a 15-minute conversation, he changed his mind. He said, that makes sense. I would be in favor of that. So basically what our job, our task ahead now is to inform our players, is to inform the officials and communicate why and the reasons behind this change.
Yeah, and I think once they get the word out there, I think some of these running backs may feel differently. We'll take a few more calls on this. John in Lockport, you're on the air, John. Hello.
Mark, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
That's a problem with the rule. I mean, you got a running back who's all by himself out there. You got 11 guys trying to rip his head off. And if he puts his head down and gets a couple extra yards, you're penalizing him. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, you can't do that. And plus, I feel like the Bills, they have way too many holes. I think they got too many holes. They can't even fill them all now. Appreciate the time.
Okay, thanks, John. A couple of different issues there. on the holes, they're in the process of trying to fill them. You sound like you're throwing your hands up and saying the season is lost. We are, 8 days into free agency, and the draft is still, 4 weeks from tomorrow. So there's plenty of time to fill the holes, and I anticipate they will. Keep in mind, this rules change is not about, competition. It's not about the score. It's not about anything other than player safety. I believe the league, when they say that, they're trying to minimize head injuries and minimize concussions. And I think this is one way, anyway, to do it. I think they bend over backwards to minimize concussions. I think that's what's going on here. One more call at this segment. Derek in Buffalo. Hi, Derek. You're on the air.
And how you doing today?
Great.
Yeah, I got a rule change. I'd like to see them get rid of half the distance to the goal. When the offense is near their end line, you get a holding call. I'd rather see them extend the first down marker further down the field than call it, first and 12 from the 2 instead of first and 10 from the 5.
That's interesting.
I hang up and listen to you.
I've never thought about that. I never thought about that, Derek. I got to think through it. But that might work. I mean, I think what you're saying is it's if it's a hold and instead of, as you said, first and 12, it would be first and 20 from the same spot, which would have the effect of giving you a holding penalty. I got to think through that. You might be onto something there. On the at first blush, it doesn't really seem, I don't see any problems with it, but I got to think through it, maybe run it by a few people. Interesting idea. All right, we'll talk more about rules changes. We'll talk more about the Bills coming up later in the show. We're going to talk a little hoops, though, in just a minute. Arthur Motes, Bills linebacker, is all jacked up about his JMU Dukes, James Madison University, playing right now in the NCAA tournament. We sat down with Arthur earlier today to talk about basketball, to talk about his team, and talk about his college and his love of college basketball. We'll get in a few Bills questions as well. Arthur Motes, when we return, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, and we're at One Bills Drive, and joining us in studio, a proud alumnus of James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia, Bills linebacker Arthur Motes.
And go Dukes!
The Dukes. I've been through Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Nice.
I know where that is.
Yeah. Hey, see, that's the only thing in Harrisonburg, Virginia, too.
Yeah.
James Madison University.
It's beautiful there. It's kind of on the edge of the Shenandoah Valley
definitely.
There, right?
Mm-hmm. It's nice. Yeah, it's definitely.
I was on my way to Charlottesville, which Charlottesville down the road, but
an hour
away?
The school, yeah. It's about 45 minutes. Yeah,
but mm-hmm. Beautiful country, and you're a proud alumnus, and proud
absolutely.
Especially tonight with the Dukes in the NCAA tournament in the first round tonight playing LIU Brooklyn. You've
mm-hmm.
followed this team all year, have you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely have, man. I'm excited to see what my boys are going to do tonight. I'm very confident in them, and, it's easy to get that nice first win out the way.
I did a little research. It's the first time in 19 years that JMU has been in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, man, it's definitely been a long, long time coming, but it's here now, and I know me being up here in Buffalo, I'm excited about it. Everybody I've talked to from the university, they're excited about it. And the team, I mean, they're just ready to, go out there and perform.
We should let our listeners know that you come into our studio all decked out in
absolutely.
JMU stuff.
JMU hat. Shout out to New Era. Got my JMU Letterman jacket. Got my JMU t-shirt that my daughter got for me for my for Christmas, actually. She said, Daddy, I know what you want for Christmas. She got me 3 JMU shirts. That's the best gift ever.
That's great.
So, yeah.
And you know what's cool? When you're at a place like that where they're, you know, going to the NCAA tournament is not a regular thing, it means a lot more, doesn't it?
It's huge, man. It's huge. I mean, if you were at Kentucky where they go every year, it's
except
like
this year.
Well, yeah, very true. Very true. It would be, you know, well, if we win the national championship, we don't care. Well, for us, the fact that we qualified and were able to get into the tournament, we're just crazy excited about it. And then the fact that we got a favorable matchup, that's what I like to call it, a favorable matchup tonight. That means we'll be able to get us a good win, man. It'll be huge for us.
They used to call these the play-in games. They don't like when you call it that, but it's the field of 68.
I had to let my wife know. I was like, hey, it's not a play-in game. We are in the tournament. This is just our first round of the tournament. We are in, you know?
Yeah, and they're playing LIU Brooklyn tonight in Dayton, Ohio.
Baby.
The good news is if they win, they advance. The bad news is if they win, they advance to play Indiana. Pretty tough matchup.
Very true, very true. But you know what? I remember when George Mason, same conference.
Yes.
You know, when they first got into the tournament, everybody was like, oh, man, they're not going to make any noise. They beat one game. And I was like, oh, man, they're definitely not going to beat UNC. They do that. Then they keep going. So I'm just saying, man, it's not the first time that something strange has happened from the CAA. Don't forget VCU as well.
I'm all surprised you're not down there. Dayton's drivable, aren't
they? Yeah, man, I thought about going. But like I said, since it's in the middle of the week, I had other obligations. But if they do win tonight, I guarantee I'll probably be there on Friday. So,
Okay. Yeah,
decked out. You'll see me. I'm going to have my face painted.
And what are the colors? Purple and gold?
Purple and gold. Absolutely,
okay, man. And that's the color your face will be?
Half purple, half gold. I haven't decided which side yet, though.
I was telling you before we went on the air, I actually have met JMU's head coach, Matt Brady.
Oh,
he
yeah.
used to coach at Marist down in Poughkeepsie and come up here. And a very good coach, really has turned that program around.
Definitely,
hasn't
man.
He?
And you can see just, you know, his work ethic and how it's, you know, trickled down into all the players. I mean, if you look at how motivated they are on the bench, it's not just, oh, I'm not in the game, so now I'm upset. I mean, the guys on the sideline, they're still cheering each other on. They're still, you know, in tune to what's going on. I feel like that's definitely helped out a lot.
And he brought on as his assistant his former coach at Siena, a guy that I know too, Mike Dean, who longtime basketball fans will remember Mike Dean around here when he bring Siena to town to play Canisius and Niagara. And he was always a bit of a wild man. I'm sure he adds a lot to
that. That's what I hear. And the benefit that, you know, I've seen is just that, you know, with Dean, he brings the old school approach to it, and he brings those possibilities and positive aspects of it. But then you have, you know, Brady, who has like that young, colorful side to it. And I feel like with them together, it makes the perfect storm. And I feel like that's why they're very successful this year.
And one little blip on the screen, and I came across this today. The big man, Rayshon Goins,
not
going to play the first half tonight.
Yeah, man, he got into a little trouble. You know, it's one of those things that in Harrisonburg, Virginia, JMU, we like to party, and sometimes the parties can get a tad bit out of control, and he just happened to, you know, be a part of that. But, you know, he'll learn from it.
Was he celebrating the CAA
championship?
Yeah,
I mean, of course. Yeah, it happened Saturday, so, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you qualify, and it's like, oh, let me live it up for a little while. But, you know, he'll learn from it.
So they'll play without him in the first half tonight and then move on and play LIU Brooklyn.
I think this is the biggest thing. You know, we didn't want the LIU game to be too big of a blowout, so we figured we'll spot him a little bit. We'll give him the first half without our big man. We'll go from there.
Hey, Arthur, what was the whole athletic program like when you were at JMU? Football, basketball? Was football predominant back then?
Yeah, I mean, football is still the dominant sport, and I feel like anytime you go south, that's pretty much how it's going to be. You know, football is the breadwinner. But for us, I know up until, like I said, this year and last year maybe, you know, it was mainly the women's basketball team that was doing most of the dominating. As far as, I mean, we had Tamara Young, who was drafted in the WNBA. I believe she went 8th overall. So, I mean, that was huge. And we had a girl, Don Evans, who also did really good. But for us, the men's team, they never really, like, produced like they should have. And you could see the talent that they had, but it just wouldn't click. And up until, you know, like I said, last year and this year, it really wasn't happening. But now, I mean, you go down there and people are excited for football. They're excited for women's basketball. They're excited for men's basketball. So it's like, I feel like that's helping the university as a whole.
You grew up on the other end of the state, right?
Absolutely.
Over in Portsmouth. How did you make your way over to the other side of JMU?
Man, actually, I'm not even going to lie. I didn't even know about JMU when I was coming out. And I was, you know, doing my visits and stuff like that. And I remember I was doing a little football camp, you know, I think it was the University of Maryland. They had invited me up to do a 1-day or 2-day football camp. And the JMU coach was working it. And he was like, hey, man, you know, my school's down here. You should come check it out. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So I go up to the university and I get there. I'm like, man, this is like a nice school. Like, I thought it was going to be some small, just rinky dink university. I was like, no, man, this is like really nice. And then I get there and I see how many people from my area, the Tywood area, 757, baby, have actually been there and was, at, you know, currently on the roster. And I was like, well, man, if you guys are here, I remember playing against some of you guys and also watching some of you guys that were ahead of me. So if I can come up here with y'all and we can, you know, dominate together. Why not?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened.
Who are some of the other NFL alumni from JMU?
Well, Charles Haley is, you know,
you
the pride.
Yeah.
You know, most Super Bowl rings. Sure. So yep. Anyone who wants to, you know, question GMU, there you go for that one. But then also, I mean, like I said, I'm up here. You have Akeem Jordan, who's with the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay. And then my boy Mike Carson. He's a GMU yeah. guy as well.
Yeah.
And I know over the past couple of years, these guys don't play anymore currently, but a guy, Scotty McGee, he was drafted the same year I was to Jacksonville. And a guy, Dorian Brooks, who was playing with the Steelers when they lost in the Super Bowl to Green Bay.
All right.
So, yeah.
He is a proud alumnus of James Madison University.
Go Dukes.
Bills linebacker Arthur Motson. The Dukes are playing tonight against LIU Brooklyn in the NCAA tournament. And we are going to talk about football, but I also want to talk about your offseason. You've just wrapped up an internship in the athletic department at the University of Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Man, it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. And basically what I was doing when I was working with the academic advisors, I was able to sit in on these meetings with some of the student athletes and share, you know, my personal stories and some of the things that I had to go through to kind of, you know, help them out and help them better understand, you know, you're not the only one going through this thing. And whereas it's easy to just, you know, say, all right, well, I'm going to quit or I will just transfer. This is not working. I had to let them know that, you know, sometimes you're going to have to, you know, just bite your teeth down and keep grinding and getting better at what you're doing. And I feel like, you know, those, you know, one-on-one meetings definitely helped out a lot. And then also I was able to sit in on, you know, the development meetings as well, and to be able to, you know, talk with people who are considering making donations to the university or people who already have made donations, and just seeing that UB pride and everything like that. It was really good.
I'm thinking a year ago you did the internship with the United Way and our paths crossed a couple of times.
Yeah.
It seems like every year you have kind of a different off-season agenda in terms of internships.
Well, huh? I feel like for me, you know, I'm in a great opportunity where I'm able to take internships and I'm able to, you know, dibble and dabble in different, you know, areas and just get experience. And for me, I feel like that's, you know, really, really, I guess, priceless, because a lot of people aren't in that position. Most people have to work every day of their lives and they don't get the opportunity to say, well, I wonder what that would be like, or I wonder what this would be like. So for me to be able to, you know, take on that role for a month or two, I feel like it really helps me out a lot.
You're only going into your fourth year in the NFL, so you've got obviously a lot of time to think about this. But what do you think? What kind of work would you like to do when you're football?
I'm actually considering going into higher education, and I want to definitely work in the development department, because I feel like that suits me the best as far as, you know, being able to build relationships with individuals and then also get them to support a cause. And, you know, the thing that I learned from the United Way was, you know, when you're raising money to help children out, you feel good about yourself and it makes you want to do your job better. Well, I feel like at the higher education level, I'm still around college athletics. And that's, you know, what my pride and joy is, because I'm coming from that arena as well. So for me to be able to, you know, promote that and get people to buy into programs, I feel like that would definitely suit me the best.
Arthur Motz, our guest, Bills linebacker. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Let's talk about your day job for a minute. Football, the Buffalo Bills.
Absolutely.
Have you had a chance to meet with the new coaching staff?
Yes, I have. And I've talked with Coach Marone. I've talked with Coach Patton as well. And I definitely, you know, I'm really excited about some of the ideas that they have going on and just the excitement of the building, man. You know, we're just ready to start back up a couple more weeks.
What do you think they have in mind for this defense? We're having trouble getting our arms around exactly what they want it to look like. You haven't had intense football.
Yeah, that's the thing. I haven't had to, like, you know, that's the whole thing we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
We're not really allowed to talk more football and schemes and stuff right now. But, I mean, just from, you know, bumping into them and looking at their history, you know, on defense it's going to be, you know, a very aggressive attacking defense. And that's definitely what you want. You don't want to be sitting back on your heels. And then also, I mean, I feel like the way that they utilize people and their skill sets is definitely going to benefit a lot of us on this team.
You have, I guess, to for lack of a better description, you have like a unique skill set. And
very true.
And look at how you've been used. I mean, you've been used inside linebacker, outside. Mm-hmm. You've been used as kind of a rush end at times.
3-4 and 4-3. So I definitely feel like that helps me out a lot. And I, from my assumption, it's definitely going to help me as far as understanding the new schemes and, you know, whatever position they want to put me at.
What do you have a preference, like after these 3 years, where you would like to play, where you're most comfortable?
I really don't have a preference. For me, I'm more or less just, you know, let's get on the field and just do it. You know, just let me know where you want me at so I can go ahead, study it up, get good at it, and then go from there. But I don't really have a preference.
You're just a couple of weeks away, I think, April 1st, April 2nd. Are you going to be here all the OTAs?
Absolutely. I don't miss anything. Yeah. This is my job. See, that's the difference. Like, you know, I'm doing my internship. It's like, okay, I understand coming in, you know, learn as much as I can. But it doesn't have that pressure on it, because in the end, it's not my job.
Yeah.
This is my job right here. This is my 9-to-5. This is what I've been working my whole life to achieve. So I always take it seriously. I don't ever want to miss anything.
Going into your fourth year, and Coach Patton will be your third defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That's a lot of turnover, isn't it?
Very true. Very true. But, you know, I like it because it gives me a lot of experience.
Tell me about you finished the season on IR, and I can't remember exactly what the injury was. What did
it was an ankle sprain or whatever. And it wasn't really nothing major. It was just the timing of it. We had two games left. With any ankle sprain, you know, 2 weeks is not going to be enough for you to get back. So it was one of those things. It wasn't at the major, though.
And what about off-season conditioning until now, until April 2nd? How often do you do stuff, and where do you do it?
I'm 4 days a week, man. And I come to the facilities. Coach Howe, Coach Ciano, Dan, and all those guys over there, man, they definitely have done a great job as far as, you know, getting me back to where I want to be and also pushing me and helping me set new goals to where I'm shooting for now. So I definitely am excited about it. And like I said, I mean, I've been working out with them since what? I think the end of January.
Okay.
So, yeah, we definitely had some time together.
New linebacker signed last week, Manny Lawson. Have you had any contact with him? Do you know
him? No, I haven't. I haven't had any contact with him, but I saw some of his highlights. Everybody talks about the combine that he did, and the 4.43. I was like, that's a big, fast guy. So glad he's on my team.
Yeah, he's got long arms, long legs. Yeah. He's kind of a different physical specimen.
Definitely.
Hey, Arthur, one more thing I want to ask you about. And this came up a month or so, and I saw the story on our website, BuffaloBills.com, mm-hmm. where your daughter, your young daughter, actually took you to school part of her Star of the Week. Tell me that
definitely.
Story.
Definitely. Well, with the Star of the Week at Elma Primary, what they basically do is they'll have all the students, you know, within a certain class have a particular week where they just discuss all about them, you know, whether it's what's their favorite snack, their favorite movie, what do they like to do when they go home. And then you have the day where you get to bring in your family. So initially my daughter, she's like, I want you to come in. So I'm like, okay, cool. She says, I want you dressed in your work clothes. So I'm like, all right. I was doing my internship, so I'm thinking like, okay, you want me in a suit? Okay, that's fine. She says, no, daddy, I want you in your work clothes, like your helmet, your pants, your jersey. So I'm like, okay. So
what grade is this?
This is kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
Now. Yeah, so mind you, no one thinks I'm really going to do it. My wife doesn't. My daughter doesn't. So I come home like the day of after my daughter catches the bus, and I'm like, all right, I'm decked out in my uniform. I go into the building. Everybody was just going crazy. Like, oh, my God, it's a football player. It's Buffalo Bills. And my daughter, like, she had a blast, loved it. And I was just up there earlier today because they had their book fair. And as soon as I walked in again, the kids like, that's the football player. That's the football player pointing at me and stuff. So it was a lot of fun, man.
That's great.
And just to see, like, my daughter, see her face light up, man, it definitely made it worth it.
And your daughter's a kindergarten. You have a younger child,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah,
recently,
4 months,
right?
Though, 4 Ava. Months. Yeah, so... Yeah, it's wild, man. All the ladies are keeping me busy.
You got a great life. No wonder you're always walking around here smiling.
I can't help it, man. I can't help it. It's definitely, you know, they are my, I don't even know how to say it. Like, they just take me to another place of happiness. It's unreal. So,
and the
always
Dukes,
enjoying it.
The Dukes might be able to do that for you tonight, too,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
You're going to be parked in front of the tube watching that game?
You already know. And my wife is going to hate it, but I'm going to have my daughter in her JMU shirt. I'm going to have Ava in her JMU shirt. I'm going to be JMU'd up. I might even try to slip my JMU hat on my wife. So, we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Arthur.
Appreciate
Good luck.
You having me
Good
on,
luck
man.
To the Dukes.
Go Dukes. And go Bills.
Yeah, exactly. Arthur Motes, Bills linebacker, watching JMU tonight as alma mater in the NCAA tournament. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Oh, it's a treat to talk to Arthur Motes. The guy has always got a smile on his face. Love talking to Arthur Motes. Thanks to him for joining us tonight on the radio show. And good luck to his JMU Dukes. Close game at halftime, apparently. Arthur busy watching that game as we speak right now. He was into it. As you heard him say, he might wind up down there in Dayton if JMU beats LIU Brooklyn. And then they beat Indiana. I don't know if that's going to go well for them on, Friday? Friday would be the next game. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk about these new running back rules, the crown of the helmet rule, and we're going to talk with a guy who really it directly impacts, Fred Jackson, Bills running back, will join us next hour. We'll talk with Fred live about the new rule and how he thinks it might impact his game. Also next hour, we'll get back to a little bracketology. Greg Paulus, former Syracuse quarterback, he played quarterback for Doug Marrone at Syracuse back in 2009. He's also played at the high level. He was the point guard, starting point guard for the Duke Blue Devils, and now he's an assistant coach, coordinator of video operations for the Ohio State football team. Greg Paulus joins us to talk about Buckeye hoops and about Syracuse football and Doug Marrone coming up in the next hour. One more hour to come, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's going to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
How did he do it? How did he do it?
I was sneaking in the door. Just sneaking in. Had to part the door open. Crawl underneath the crawl space.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
This gentleman is the Buffalo Bills' finest hour.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. On the official voice of the Buffalo Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
First down for the Bills at the 14. Fred Jackson, fresh legs, gets the carry. Churning those legs, breaks a tackle at the 15. Heads to the end zone. Touchdown! Fred Jackson, touchdown, Buffalo! A 14-yard run, he would not be denied.
That's what he does. That's what Fred Jackson does for the Buffalo Bills, breaking tackles. And we'll see if that's going to change at all with the new rule. A pass today by the National Football League owners meeting out in Arizona. Rule proposal number 6, initiating contact with the crown of the helmet. It is now a foul if a runner or a tackler initiates forcible contact by delivering the blow with the top or crown of his helmet against an opponent when both players are clearly outside the tackle box. Incidental contact shall not be a foul. Fred Jackson joins us live on the line right now to talk about that. Fred, thanks for coming on the show with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I don't know if you just heard, before we get to the crown of the helmet thing, did you hear the soundbite we had with Deshard Choice a minute ago, and he scored the touchdown against the Jets? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I did. I heard.
Did you hear what he? Did you remember when he described? Do we have that, Ruskin?
I was sneaking in the door, just sneaking in. Had to part the door open, crawl underneath the crawl space.
That was. Yeah. I still crack up when I. That was him describing his touchdown dance and when he scored that touchdown. That guy's nuts. He's nuts, isn't he, Deshard?
He is. He's a joy to be around. He's always got something to keep you on your toes like that. So you know, he's always doing that. And he kept our running back alive, I can tell you that.
I bet he did. All right, Fred, this is why we got you on the show, to talk about the rule that was approved today. I saw your tweet today a little bit earlier when you said, I'm not sliding. Is that the way you're approaching this? You're not going to slide, huh?
Without a doubt. You know, it's. I mean, you've got to respect what they're doing. They're trying to make our game safe. But at the same time, you know, you feel like you're limited in some of the things you can do as a runner. But I mean, I guess you just have to evolve, but at the same time, you can't change how you're playing. And, you know, I'm a guy that likes to be physical in the running game. And, you know, we'll see what goes on throughout the year. You know, my thing is I like to break tackles, and to create some contact is going to be part of, you know, breaking tackles. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what goes on.
Do you find, Fred, that you'd lower your head to break tackles? I mean, do you lead with the crown of your helmet when you're running the ball?
I don't think that I lead with the crown of my helmet, but, you know, at the same time, when you go to break a tackle and a DB is coming at you, the first thing you do is lower your shoulder, and by lowering your shoulder, you're lowering your head. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they call it. So, you know, that's one of the things I like to do is use my shoulder to break a lot of tackles. And you got to remember, those safeties are coming downhill pretty fast, and, you know, the thing they try to do is get their shoulders low too. So, I think there will be some contact, you know, with the helmet. So, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how it's called, and, you know, they'll explain it further to us once we get into camp and things like that.
Yeah, I know, and so much of what you do, especially at the running back spot, is instinctive, I know. You know, you're operating on instincts, but do you think it'd be possible to get low, to lower your shoulder pad level and not, you know, dip your head so that the crown goes first? I mean, is it possible to lower the shoulder pads and not, you know, put the crown of your helmet, you know, as the leading element there?
You know, it's going to be hard to do. You know, I think, you know, as an instinct, the first thing you do is ball up. You know, when you ball up and you're going into contact, you know, the thing that's exposed the most is your helmet. So, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, I think it's going to put a lot of the decisions have to be made on the field with the referee. So, you know, I think that put them in a tough situation as well as us. You know, how do we protect ourselves without, you know, getting low? You want us to run straight up and down, and that's the only way we can tell that we're not hitting with the crown of our helmet. So, you know, I'm not a fan of it. You know, we'll have to abide by the rules just because it is a rule. But, you know, I think it's going to create more problems than it does than solving them, I guess.
Tell me about this too, Fred. So much of your running is, you know, contact running and yards after contact. A lot of that comes between the tackles. Does it matter to you that this rule particularly says that it is, you know, outside the tackle box? It's pretty clearly described and defined exactly where they can call this. Does that matter much, do you think?
I don't think so, because you got guys, you know, that are running, you know, as fast as everybody is in the NFL, you know, the last thing you're thinking about is where you are on the field. You know, if you're in the tackle box or outside of it, you're just trying to make a play. And you got safeties that feel so fast. They come downhill so fast. You got corners that shoot in and try and go for your legs. And the thing you're trying to do is protect yourself by, you know, getting your shoulder down. So, you know, where they're saying it is and all that, I think is not what's going to be important to guys. It's just going to be about trying to, you know, not to get that penalty when you have the opportunity to try and get down and protect yourself, or if you're going to create, you know, that flag by hitting them with the crown of your helmet.
I read where you said that you're going to set aside some money. You expected you'd be fined because of the way you play, Fred?
You know, it's always a possibility. So you always want to have that, you know, that money set aside just in case it's a possibility. You know, but I do consider myself, you know, a physical running back, and one of the things I like to do is break tackles. So that's one of the things you have to do is get low and, you know, create impact instead of taking it. So it's always a possibility.
We're talking with Fred Jackson, Bills running back, about the new rule put in place today by the NFL as far as helmet contact initiated by running backs. Fred, let me play a sound by Jeff Fisher, Rams coach, part of the competition committee, talked about the feedback they've already received from players like yourself, and here's what he had to say about
that. Over the last day or so, we've had we've received a lot of opinions from former running backs, some in favor of this and some opposed to this. And with respect for all of them, you know, prior to coming in here, I got a phone call from Eddie George, and Eddie George said, "What's going on?" And he took the position that this is going to be a difficult thing to enforce and a difficult way to play this game. And after a 15-minute conversation, he changed his mind. He said, "That makes sense. I would be in favor of that." So basically what our job, our task ahead now is to inform our players, is to inform the officials and communicate why and the reasons behind this change.
What do you think of that, Fred? I mean, do you think the more you know about this, the better it might seem to you when you get the rule explained to you and actually shown to you on video what it's going to look like?
Well, I think that's always something that they're going to have to explain it to guys and, you know, make them understand where they're coming from. You know, and that's, again, once we get into camp, the thing they do is go over with us the new rule changes and what they're expecting. So, you know, I still think it's going to be a difficult task ahead to see how it's enforced and what they're looking for, but they have a plan for it, I guess. So we'll see what they say.
How much of this, Fred, do you approach it like this is the deal we make? We expose ourselves to violent hits, including potentially hits to the head when we play this game. I mean, do you accept those risks?
Without a doubt. You know, we can't play this game if we don't. You know, when we ink our name on that contract, we know what we're signing up for, so... you know, it's a physical game, and what I said this earlier, you know, we that's what drew us to this game instead of, you know, basketball or baseball is how physical we are. We get to go out and be physical and, you know, beat the crap out of each other for 3 hours and, you know, see who comes out on top. So, you know, we know that we put ourselves in harm, we put our bodies in harm whenever we step on that field. And, you know, for those who play this game, you have to have a love for that, or, you know, you wouldn't be able to do it. And I think I could speak for everybody in the NFL when I say, you know, there's a part of this brutality of this sport that, you know, draws us to it. That's why we want to play it.
Yeah, and, you know, the league's position is they're interested in player safety, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I bet the league is also interested in, you know, legal liability, right? I mean, there are numerous lawsuits filed against the NFL for concussions and concussion-related symptoms, and that's got to be on the minds of the NFL when they institute a change like this.
No question. You know, anytime you're under scrutiny like they have been about, you know, from former and past players, they're going to try and protect themselves any way that they can, and this is one of those ways. So, I mean, you can't, you know, knock them for that, but, you know, at the same time, you know, you got to let us go out there and play.
Yeah. Well, Fred, before we let you go, give us an update on your physical status. Obviously, the season cut short last year. How's your rehab going? And what, you're going to be in here in a week or two, I would think, for the start of the OTAs.
Everything's good. Yep, everything's good. Been working out. Been up at the facility working out with Coach Ciano and some of the other guys, you know, Brad Smith, Mike Clausen, all those guys in there. So, you know, it's good to be up there doing that. I'm on track, ready to go, you know. Getting antsy, looking forward to getting back into it.
Will you be able to do anything in the OTAs, or are you going to keep, kind of take it slow initially?
I'm doing it all. You know, I'm trying to hit the ground running and getting back into it as soon as I can. You know, been cleared by all doctors to do everything. So, you know, I'm ready to get back into it and, you know, get that opportunity to go out there and prove that, you know, I need to be on the field for these coaches.
That's great. Fred, thanks very much for coming out to talk with us. This rule really does impact you, doesn't it? I mean, when you think about this rule, you're the guy that comes to mind for me because you do have so much contact. You thrive on yards after contact, right? Yes.
That's just it. You know, I think this rule, you know, as anybody on this team, I think it applies to me the most. So, I mean, it's one of those things that I thrive on is being able to, you know, break tackles and make yards after contact. So we'll see what happens. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back out there on the field and see what happens and how this rule affects me.
We look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, Fred. Thanks very much for doing this tonight for us.
Yep, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Fred Jackson, Bills running back. You heard him. I think he's right. It does affect him, that rule. I mean, the guy, I don't have the numbers, but yards after contact, the guy has to be among the league leaders in the National Football League in recent years. I mean, he thrives on that. He as Mark Kelso is the one who pointed it out to me as we moved through the season the last few years, how, not, you know, he gets yards after contact because he has such great balance, contact balance. Coach Kelso calls it, and I think he's right. He can take hits and keep going, and he delivers blows too. I mean, with his stiff arm from time to time. His game, I would think, would be affected by this, and if you have thoughts on that, give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can always follow us on Twitter, too. Your thoughts on what Fred had to say about the new rule change in the NFL, the contact initiated by running backs. It would affect him. I do see the point. I do see why the league is doing it. And I understand it. It's, you know, player safety. It's liability down the road. It's an attempt to prevent hits to the head. Already defenders are forbidden from doing that sort of a helmet-to-helmet hit or any kind of leading with their helmet, and now they've extended that to the running backs under this new rule. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, talked today at the press conference out in Scottsdale, Arizona, about the new rule and the feedback that's already come in about the new rule.
These decisions aren't made in isolation. They're made with a lot of input from probably almost every one of the entities you just discussed, current players, former players, current coaches, former coaches, general managers, fans, and you have to balance all those issues. But when the analysis, and they spend an awful lot of time going through this, and they come back with recommendations of techniques that they think can improve the game, but more importantly, improve safety, I think we've demonstrated the game is safer and the game is better. And so we can do both of those, and that's what we're proud of, and we're going to continue to do that intelligently.
Roger Goodell talking about the rules change today. It does impact Fred Jackson. It probably will change the game. And if, you know, on the face of it, it's easy to say, oh, they're ruining football. They're making it a game that is not a collision sport anymore. But I will give the NFL the benefit of the doubt on this. They really do want to make it safer, I believe. They really do have a legal liability problem. And I've heard Commissioner Goodell and Jeff Fisher and somebody over the last few days talk, I think it was Rich McKay, who is, I believe, the chairman of the competition committee, indicate that they can affect behavior. They can change behavior on field. They've seen it with some of the recent rules changes on other issues when it comes to leading with the head. And they're probably right about that. By making these rules changes, they can make it a safer game. They point, I think, directly, Rich McKay pointed today, to the kickoff rule that's been in place now for a couple of years, in an effort to make the game safer. Give us a call if you have thoughts on this. Brian from the Southern Tier. Hello, Brian. You're on the air. How you doing?
How you doing?
Okay.
I don't have any. I like the idea, obviously, of making the game safer. But the game as it's constructed now has enough gray area for the officials. Whether it be you want to call holding penalties, you want to have pass interference, discretionary, you want to have. As it stands now, the defender, where there's enough calls coming in, where it's a bang-bang play, where sometimes the receiver ducks and the defender gets to, it changes the way the game is. It can change the outcome of the game. I'm just concerned that it's just another facet that the officials, it's going to be a gray area where you're going to watch a football game, your running back's going to go around the corner, have a really nice break a tackle,
where you normally get the whole crowd ramped up, and there's going to be the flag, and it could be something that's going to cost your team a game.
Yeah, make no mistake about it. The officials will exercise discretion on this particular rule, and they will look at it, and they're going to they're not going to look at it on replay. It's not reviewable. But I'm looking for the one analysis of this rule that I found today. But it's clearly set up to be at the discretion of the official. It is limited. I mean, again, keep in mind, it is outside the tackle box. It is, you know, in that sense, it's limited. It's with the top of the helmet, the crown of the helmet, not the face mask. But what they want to do is make sure that the officials exercise discretion here. I'm trying to find it here. It's a know it when you see it standard that could potentially cause reasonable minds to differ. As a result, the decision will be treated as a judgment call, not subject to replay review. It is going to be at the discretion of the officials. It is going to be a judgment call on the part of the officials. And there are going to be times when it changes a game and changes the outcome of a play. There's no question about that. And by the way, that's what the league wants to do. They want to change the game slightly in this sense to make it safer. That's what they say. Mike in Orchard Park, you're on the air. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Murph, how are you doing today?
Okay.
Listen, hey, Murph, I'm an administrator in a local youth football organization, and we made this change a few years, probably 2 years ago. And it goes from back when we were taught, when we played, to do just that. Lower your head, run through the chest of the linebacker. In hindsight, looking at it, it was ridiculous. And looking at all these slow-mo plays right now that they're showing and highlighting, I can't believe these running backs, I don't know if they're looking for air time or what, are even debating it. When you see, I saw one, I don't know who it was, on Green Bay, and you just see it was a Kevin Everett hit. His neck, I'm surprised he didn't break it.
Yep.
And, you know, I've been saying this, as I said, you know, being involved with the youth football, when I see at pro and the college level, when you see these safeties come flying in at 2 feet off the ground and hitting a guy, you know, head first, I used to cringe. And now this is the greatest thing. You can run. We all played football. You run the ball when you're bearing down and someone's coming to tackle you. Yes, you lower it and you get small, but your face mask should be up.
I think you're right.
Not bearing, not looking at the ground.
Right.
I think it's a great thing, and I think it's good for youth sports, and it's good to take that step and take the head right out of the whole game.
Mike, thanks for calling. In fact, Rich McKay, the chairman of the competition committee, did specifically say today that he wants this rule to kind of trickle down to lower levels of the sport, high school and youth football, among many other safety issues that the league addresses. There's Chris. Chris, you're on the air. Hello.
John, I will debate what that guy just said. I totally disagree with him. I think that before long, we're going to end up playing two-hand touch. This is not done for player safety. They may say it's done for that reason, but it's done for legal liability reasons. That's all they're doing this for. They're in a lawsuit with players who are suing them right now, past players, for alleged allegations. The NFL didn't tell them they'll get concussions and things like that. And this game, so that's the motivation. And I don't like when somebody tries to sell it. For some reason, you know, they just say player safety, but that's the bottom line reason. I guarantee you they wouldn't be doing it but for their lawsuits.
Yeah, and the lawsuits are definitely an issue. You're right about that, Chris. But I'm not going to be, I'm not going to be that, jaded to say that that's the only thing. I do think that player safety, I mean, the lawsuits, and lawsuits are lawsuits, but they are tied in some respects to player safety. That's where the lawsuits arise from. I don't know if it will, you know, substantially alter the way the game is played. It will change the way running backs approach tacklers in the open field, outside the tackle box. And I don't know if you think back, I mean, I'm not a football historian, but when you think about the evolution of the game, I don't know that anybody ever intended for the top of the helmet, and we're only talking about the top of the helmet, I don't think anyone ever intended for the top of the helmet to be used as a weapon, essentially, as something you should lead with and make that, you know, the focal point of your contact with the opponent, whether it's on the defensive side of the ball or the offensive side of the ball. I just don't believe that's what they had in mind. One more call. Let's go to Jim in Buffalo. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph, how you doing?
Okay.
Okay. Hey, what's the penalty for that? Say you're 50 yards downfield and you hit with the crown of the helmet. What, 10 yards from
15,
the point 50, of...
15 yards. You know, 15 yards from
the...
Nope, from the line of scrimmage. It's an automatic first down if it's against the defense. And if it's flagrant, they say the new rule says they can disqualify. So it's a pretty substantial penalty.
Yeah, especially if you run 70 yards downfield and then you hit with the crown of the helmet.
Plays coming back, you know? Yeah, very much. All right, thanks very much, Jim. We're going to take a break. We're going to switch gears for a second when we return. Talk a little bit about Doug Marrone's roots at Syracuse. His quarterback in his first year at Syracuse was a guy named Greg Paulus, who had just come off a four-year string of playing point guard for the Duke Blue Devils in basketball. Greg Paulus is now an assistant coach, director of video operations for the Buckeyes of Ohio State, and they're getting ready for an NCAA tournament game on Friday against Iona. We'll talk with Greg Paulus when we return from the Ohio State Buckeyes basketball team. We'll talk to him about, obviously, the tournament. We'll also talk about his year with Doug Marrone at Syracuse. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Welcome back to the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are at One Bills Drive. Of course, everybody's talking about the tournament, the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament that starts this week. On the line with us now, a gentleman who is about ready to dive headfirst into the tournament after diving previously in as a point guard for the Duke Blue Devils. He's also played quarterback under Doug Marrone at Syracuse University. We're on the line with the video coordinator for Ohio State Buckeye basketball, Greg Paulus, the native of Syracuse, of Manlius, New York. Greg, thank you very much for being on the air with us.
Thanks for having me.
Are you a Bills fan? Let's get that out of the way first. I know that Syracuse is kind of right on the fault line between Bills and Giants and sometimes Jets. Where do you stand on that, Greg?
I'm a Bills fan. I became one when Coach Marrone accepted that job, and I'm really excited to watch his team.
All right, great. A Bills fan of 2 month vintage. We appreciate that. Hey, I was thinking about this. Your job is video coordinator, so the pairings come out, the brackets come out Sunday at 6:15 or so, and all of a sudden, a guy like you probably has to scramble. And I'm thinking you probably got to prepare for what, three different potential opponents. You know, you got Iona, but also the other bracket. You've got to get video together probably for all three teams, right?
It's a little bit of a hectic time. It's a lot of fun playing in it when I was at Duke, and now having the opportunity to be a part of it. This is my second year at Ohio State, and it's one of those things where as soon as you find out where you're going, you kind of get on the phone and you start trying to figure out as much as you can, as much information about the team that you're going to play, and it happens quickly. So it's something that has been a lot of fun to learn, and just trying to get as much preparation as possible with the game on Friday night.
You know, I was watching the brackets with my son Sunday, Greg, and he asked me, do teams exchange video like NFL teams? You don't, right? You have to get it wherever you can get it, right?
You can. If there's an agreement, you can do that throughout the regular season, but a lot of the time with such short notice, with the way that technology has become the last several years, you can just go on to different websites online, download the games from there, and that is the most efficient time saving, and you can get a chance to break it down and analyze it. So that's kind of been the route the last couple of years.
I'm guessing that Coach Mata, like most big time coaches, lives with video, right? I mean, he probably is looking for a lot from you when it comes to what he wants to see and what he wants you to put together, your department.
We spend a lot of time together, and get the chance to see the different sides of how he runs the program. It's been a great 2 years for me to learn under him. He's one of the best coaches in the game. He's one of the best people. And having the opportunity to spend the amount of time that I get to spend with him and really analyze and break down our team, opponents that we're going to play, it's been an absolute blessing for me, and I'm really lucky to be in the position I'm in.
And you got to be excited about the tournament, which for you guys starts, what, Friday night in Dayton, Ohio, against Iona, a Metro Atlantic Conference team that some folks up here will be familiar with. Tell me about that matchup and what you think of Iona.
Well, Iona's really good. They've won five straight. They got one of the best scorers in the country, and their two guards together are one of the top duos in the country as far as points put on the board. Very efficient offensively. They like to play up-tempo and score as many points as they can. They're one of the nation's top scoring teams over the years, and they continue that trend again this year. So it's going to be a great challenge for us. Anytime that someone can win their own conference, get a chance to participate in the NCAA tournament, They're a really good team, and we're going to have a great challenge on our hands.
Yeah, and talk about challenges, though, Greg. When you look back at the meat grinder, that's the Big Ten conference schedule. I know that you know that people like the Big East. Some people like other conferences, but I can't imagine there's a tougher night in, night out conference out there than the Big Ten and the kind of opponents that you guys have faced. And oh, by the way, you've won your last 8 games, including Big Ten conference tournament the other day. You got to feel pretty good about getting through that stretch like that.
Well, I think the team has gotten better as the season has gone along. We're playing some good basketball right now. Having another week to practice is another opportunity for us to get better. But, you know, playing in the Big Ten, you play in the best conference in America this year. You get a chance to play against the best every night. And we feel that that has allowed us to prepare for this situation where there's going to be different styles. There's going to be, you know, zones and presses and man. And we've seen a little bit of that throughout different teams throughout the year. So playing in the Big Ten and us having the weekend that we had, I think we have a competent team right now.
And one of the things that you have on your roster there at Ohio State, Greg, one of my favorite players in college basketball the last few years, Aaron Kraft. You must hear that a lot. But the guy is so tenacious defensively and seems to work so hard on defense. He is just a pleasure to watch if you appreciate good defense, isn't he?
He's a special player. He's an even better person, but on the basketball floor, the way that he can impact the game, with the way he runs our basketball team, creating opportunities for himself and his teammates, and defensively, he just completely disrupts the game. He's the best defender in college basketball, and you know, we're glad he's on our side.
Do you anticipate, I mean, this team's coming off a year last year when you went all the way to the Final Four and you've got a lot of people back from that team. Are guys thinking about that, or are they pretty much focused on Iona at least this week?
We're focused on the next game ahead. Whenever a team gets a chance to look ahead or is not focused on the task at hand, you know, that's when things can really get you. And with this basketball team, it's been one day at a time, and I think that has been a good part and a big reason for our success recently, and we're hoping to keep that going. But absolute focus on Iona. They're a really good basketball team that can really score the ball, and it's a good challenge for our defense.
We're on the line with Greg Paulus. He is the video coordinator for Ohio State Buckeyes basketball, a former Mr. Basketball in New York State from his time at CBA in Syracuse, and a point guard for a pretty good Duke team. Talk about that experience and how that helps you in coaching basketball now, Greg.
Well, I think from my experience at Duke, having the opportunity to play for one of the greatest coaches of all time and Coach K, being able to play on the biggest stage there down in Durham, North Carolina, and just being around him for 4 years, having the opportunity to play with some terrific players, and it's something that I learned the game from the best. I got a chance to have a unique experience down there, and it's one that is something I'll always remember and use for the rest of my life, whether that's on the court, off the court, and something that I really enjoyed. And I feel like it's been very beneficial throughout my couple years of being on the coaching side of this, just to be able to learn from me playing and having that opportunity to put the Duke uniform on.
Greg, you had really one of the remarkable careers in recent college sports history, because obviously you play on that great Duke basketball team, and then with your eligibility in basketball used up, you come essentially back home and go to Syracuse University for, what, a master's degree. And you went there when a first-year head coach walked in the door, Doug Marrone. Tell me about that and your first experience with Coach Marrone and why you decided to go there and play quarterback for the Orange.
My first experience with Coach Marrone was on my official visit. I had to redo the recruiting process after my 4 years of eligibility was used up. And having the opportunity to spend with Coach Marrone on the visit, my first impression was, this is a guy that I want to play for. We had great conversation. We have a great relationship now. And having the opportunity to play for him, to have him as a mentor, to learn under him for 1 year and to continue to do that now, it's been something that is really special to me. And I'm really appreciative that he gave me an opportunity to play for him, even though it was for 1 year. It was a little bit of a unique situation. And I just am thankful to have the opportunity to play for him and be his quarterback.
Hey, Greg, that was his first year at Syracuse, and just as it is his first year now here with the Buffalo Bills, what was he like back then? Was he, like, sure-footed? Did he know exactly what he wanted to do as a first-year head coach there at Syracuse?
Well, he had a plan, and he is a guy that is prepared for all situations. His work ethic is incredible. His ability to communicate and relate to the players is something that doesn't take very long to notice, and it's something that really attracts you to, you know, want to run through a wall for him. And I know that the guys at Syracuse wanted to do that. It was a little bit different of a situation trying to, you know, change that culture and, you know, really take it to the next level. And he did that during his 4 years there. And, you know, to be a part of that first year and try to help him change the culture, it was something that, you know, under his leadership, he did an outstanding job.
How do you go about changing a culture like that, Greg?
Well, I think he has, with his background and his experience, his IQ with football, his experience of playing in the NFL and understanding how to relate to kids and how to get the best out of them, you know, it was very evident to us. Holding players and the program accountable with discipline and structure, he did a great job of, you know, really understanding what it took to compete at the highest level and to get the results that we wanted. And he helped guys accountable for it. And I think that was very influential to the success that Syracuse had the last several years under him.
Yeah, I was reading about that year and your year at quarterback. There was a, you know, kind of a late season game against Cincinnati, November game, where things did not go well for the Orange. And apparently in the post-game press conference, Coach Marone really almost passionately came to your defense. Do you remember that? And do you remember what was said back then?
I remember, you know, talking with Coach, and I do remember that situation. And, you know, Coach is a guy that is going to do everything he can to win, and he understands what it takes. And I appreciate his the way he handled that situation, and glad that he gave me an opportunity.
Hey, Greg, what was it like? Did you ever, I know you're still pretty young, but do you ever reflect on what you did? I mean, you played college basketball at the highest level and college football at, you know, the high level of, you know, the Big East Conference. It's pretty remarkable what you managed to accomplish in that 5 or 6 year span, wasn't it?
I appreciate that. It's something where I always am focused on what the task is at hand. So, you know, when I was at Syracuse, it was all about Syracuse football and how to make that program better. And the same thing when I was at Duke, it was 100% on Duke basketball and what I can do. And right now it's about Ohio State hoops and trying to help out in whatever way I can, help Coach Mott in this program out. And at some point there will be more reflection, but I'm one to kind of, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? I'd like to make that one as special as the last 5 or 6 years. And I know that I've been really lucky to have some really unique situations and experiences, and I just try to keep working and keep trying to hopefully have that same type of success.
What do you think the next thing down the road for you is, Greg? I mean, do you see yourself as a head coach college basketball sometime?
I would like to be. It's something that I'm very passionate about. I've always wanted to be a college basketball coach, and to have the opportunity to play for Coach K and to coach at the Naval Academy for one season and now be at Ohio State for two. I'm really learning a lot and having the opportunity to work with some terrific people in universities, I think will allow me to hopefully reach my dream here whenever that time comes.
Well, Greg, we wish you best of luck. You've got Iona, the Buckeyes play Iona on Friday right down the road. That's about as close as it gets to a home game for you guys, right, playing in Dayton, Ohio?
Yeah, it's not too far away. It's about an hour, hour and 15 minutes, and we're looking forward to seeing Buckeye Nation in full effect out there.
Greg, thanks very much for joining us. Good luck to you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Greg Paulus is the video coordinator for Ohio State Buckeye basketball. He is a product of CBA in Syracuse. Of course, played quarterback at Syracuse for Bills head coach Doug Marone. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Thanks again to Greg Paulus, former Syracuse quarterback under Doug Marone and former point guard for the Duke Blue Devils under Mike Krzyzewski and now the video coordinator for Ohio State basketball. They play in the tournament on Friday against Iona. The tournament, everybody's talking about the tournament. If you checked out Bill's Bracketology yet, It's at BuffaloBills.com. It's going on until next Monday. It's a fan voting tournament to pick the Bills' top play of the 2012 season, elimination style, through brackets. The matchup today, Donald Jones and his touchdown catch against New England.
The shotgun, the snap, looks down the middle, fires down the middle, caught by Donald Jones at the 40, in the clear, at midfield, inside the New England territory at the 30, Jones at the 20, 15, 10, they're trying to chase him down, heads to the end zone, touchdown! Donald Jones goes all the way, and I mean all the way for the touchdown!
Donald Jones, one play. He's up against Leotis McKelvin and his punt return touchdown against the Dolphins on Thursday Night Football.
The punter, Fields, kick in the air, low kick. Leotis backing up, fields it at the 21-yard line. On the numbers, left side in front of the Buffalo bench. Leotis at the 30, 35, 40. On the run at midfield, Leotis is going. He's going to the house. He's doing it again. Leotis McKelvin into the end zone. My man, Leotis, touchdown Buffalo.
Leotis McKelvin against Donald Jones, that is in Bills Bracketology. You can vote right now at BuffaloBills.com/Bracketology. It all goes down to the top play of the year coming up next Monday night. BuffaloBills.com/Bracketology. Check that out. Got a couple of minutes left here, a couple of news items today. Ed Reed apparently is going to leave the Baltimore Ravens and ready to sign on with the Houston Texans. He's reached a contract agreement with the Texans, according to CBS Sports' Jason LaConfora. He's 34 years old. 61 career interceptions, all with the Ravens. How about that? Talk about a roster being decimated. They've already lost Ray Lewis. They've lost Donnell Ellerby, and Anquan Boldin is gone, and now Ed Reed ready to sign with the Houston Texans. The news earlier today, Brian Urlacher will not be back with the Chicago Bears. The team announcing tonight they were unable to reach an agreement with the veteran linebacker, Brian Urlacher. Very interesting, 13-year career with the Chicago Bears. Let's squeeze in a phone call. We'll go to Ed in Angola. Ed, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph, how you doing tonight?
Okay.
Murph, I was going to ask you this. You brought up Urlacher. Does he got any gas left in the tank?
Boy, that's a good question.
Since we're decimated at linebacker, do we have enough cap room to make him an offer? And do you think he can help us? I mean, I know he can help us because we're sadly understaffed at linebacker.
Yeah, they need linebackers. Yeah. You know, Urlacher's got a lot of miles on the odometer, you know, at 13 years in the league, and he's getting up there. I don't know if there's anything left there. He certainly is not a long-term solution. I guess I wouldn't object if the Bills kicked the tires a little bit. I was looking at the numbers. He rejected, I think, what did I read, a $2 million offer from Chicago. So you wonder how much money it would take. And, boy, if you get him, it'd just be sort of a rental player deal because he really can't have a whole lot left. I don't know. I'm not that interested in Brian Urlacher, but you're right. They need linebackers. We'll talk more about that and other NFL issues tomorrow night on the podcast. Hockey takes us over tomorrow night, so we'll make way. The podcast is always available at BuffaloBills.com/John Murphy Show. We want to thank our presenting sponsor tonight, NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Jafari, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews, production assistant tonight from Dallas Miller. Podcast tomorrow, The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.